Hey guys, thanks for tuning us in for this 27th episode of Good Questions with Cameron Dole. Special guests for this episode include Laura Nyrider, Neil Ross, Chuck Liddell, and Abby Wambach. If you would, please take the time to subscribe, drop a like, comment, and even share with your friends. Up first is Laura Nyrider. You know her from Netflix Making a Murderer. Also from season 2 of Conviction of False Confessions, the podcast, and they invite listeners into the front lines in the fight against wrongful convictions. First off, Laura, thank you so much for your time.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
Now, Conviction False Confessions, when you first started, got underway with the podcast, did you expect the feedback and the following that you've received?
Well, you know, here's the thing, right? So I've represented Brendan Dassey for 13 years. I'm a lawyer who works on cases of wrongful conviction. And my client Brendan Dassey's story a few years ago was told in the Netflix series Making a Murderer, which, you know, to my surprise, shock and delight, set the world on fire. Millions of people watched that show, heard what happened to him, falsely confessed to a crime he didn't commit when he was 16, a special ed student, still in prison today. And his story energized people so much and made them want to learn more about the criminal system, made them want to learn more about what they can make a difference to prevent wrongful convictions. And, you know, after I saw that happen, I just said, well, God, you know, Brendan's not alone. There are so many other people who have been through what he went through, so many other people whose stories are just as disturbing, just as engrossing, just as motivating to me. And that's why we made our podcast, Wrongful Conviction, False Confessions. You can listen to it on Apple or wherever you get your podcasts. 12 more stories of people who falsely confessed. They did not commit crimes that DNA or forensic evidence later proved they were completely innocent of.
And Laura, do stories like this, do they make you question whether our Justice Department is quite as infallible as some people think?
Well, you know, stories like this make me realize that what we have to do now more than anything else is come together and learn from these stories, right? One of the parts of my work that I'm so, you know, proud about is that we work just with defense attorneys. We work with police and prosecutors around the country to study cases of wrongful conviction, to hear about false confessions, to break down why people confess the crimes they didn't commit, what goes wrong in the interrogation room makes them do that, and then how can we from that, right? How can we make sure that this doesn't happen again, that we make sure real perpetrators are behind bars while innocent people are back at home with their families?
And what are some of the most eye-opening, maybe aha moments that you've had in the making of season 2?
Yeah, it's a really good question. You know, we use real interrogation recording to make our podcast, to bring listeners inside the interrogation room, give them a sense of what happens in there. And what happens, you'll see, the psychology of the interrogation room is fascinating, something that's fascinated me for 13 years. Because what you'll hear are police officers using techniques that are perfectly legal, that in many cases they've been used, but that to you and me are shocking. You'll hear police officers threatening people with the death penalty unless they confess. Maybe life in prison unless you confess. You'll hear police officers lying to suspects about the evidence against them, right? I found your DNA at the scene. I found your fingerprints on the gun. When that's totally false, the police are allowed to do that, and it happens all the time. And if you're an innocent person sitting in that interrogation room, you're being told your DNA is at the scene and you're going to get the death penalty unless you confess. After several hours of this, suddenly you're going to think to yourself, I'm trapped, I'm cornered, I don't understand this, but this guy really believes I'm guilty. I've got to do something to save my life. I guess I have to confess. That's what happens in these cases.
And how much is the mentality of the confessor something that you guys have a focus on as well?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, if you are a young person, if you have intellectual disability, that does make you more likely to falsely confess, easier to break using these interrogation tactics. But what's fascinating, and what I've learned over the course of my years doing this work, is that you don't have to be young. You don't have to have intellectual disability. These tactics work on all of us, every single one of us, as our breaking point. It may take longer for some people than others. So, for example, in our first episode, which just dropped yesterday, we tell the story of four United States Navy sailors right? Honorable guys, disciplined guys who signed up to serve their country, fight for their country, were all hauled into the interrogation room, questioned about the deaths their fellow sailors left, and told they'd get the death penalty unless they confess. And one by one, these four guys end up giving false to this most dishonorable of actions, murdering their fellow sailor's wife. They all go down based on their confessions. Here is Bonsard, Virginia, until, lo and behold, the DNA is tested, and it hits to a serial rapist targeting women in the very apartment building that that victim lived in. It's an incredible story that shows, you know, it's not just for uniquely vulnerable people. It can happen to any of us.
And Laura, for you, does the human element, is that why the false confessions, you think, or the false convictions as well, are stories that are more prevalent than we once knew of before?
Well, I think that's right. You know, it's interesting. These stories are just being discovered right now because DNA is being used to test cases like never before. Although it's for DNA, we all think this is a panacea now. Everything's getting DNA tested. Wrongful convictions don't happen any longer. You know, DNA, if you think about it, is available only in a fraction of cases, you know, rapes and some murders, your stabbings and strangulations. But if you think about cases like shootings or even armed robberies, burglaries, drug crimes, all those cases, there's nothing to test. So this happens way more often. And you're right, there's a human element to these stories that is, you know, that's why I do this work. I can't put it down when I hear the stories of good people who are put through the ringer, who lose, you know, decades of their lives behind bars for crimes they didn't commit, while the real perpetrator often is out on the streets, free to continue committing crimes. And then when I meet these folks or work for them, if I'm lucky enough to do that, and get to know them, they're some of the most incredible human beings I've ever met. To survive that ordeal decades behind bars, you'd think you would come out angry and resentful. But they don't. They come out grateful to be able to breathe free air again. And grateful to be able to eat what they want for breakfast again. It's incredible.
And for you, Laura, what is the end goal? What changes do you see that need to be made to the Justice Department to keep this from being a recurring theme, if you will?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a lot of changes we can make, you know, to prevent false confessions. That's true. A lot of people don't know that in most states around the country, it is perfectly legal for kids to be questioned without the parents ever being notified, right? We got to change that. We're starting to change that. After making a murderer, two states, Illinois and California, passed laws requiring lawyers actually inside the interrogation room for kids. But we've got to be more than two states. We've got to keep that up. Also, only 27 states require interrogations to be recorded at all. It means in 23 states, you go into the interrogation room, whatever happens to you there stays in the interrogation room. We got to get transparency. It's an important first step changing the system.
That's right. And again, Conviction, False Confession, Season 2, now available anywhere you get your podcast. And Laura, I always want to make sure and let our listeners know where they can keep up with you via social media as well.
Absolutely, yes. You can follow me on Instagram or Twitter at Laura Nyreiter.
Well, Laura, it's been great to visit with you. I look forward to catching up with the podcast myself and hope you have a great rest of your week, my friend.
Thanks so much. You take care.
Guys, our next special guest, you've heard his voice for probably as long as I have been. My first introduction to him would have been on the G.I. Joe cartoons back in the 80s. Neil Ross on the line with us. And first off, Neil, thank you so much for taking the time.
Oh, thank you for having me on, Cameron. I appreciate it. Thanks.
And Neil, the voice work that you have done, folks have heard it for many years. And where did the first idea of doing voice work for you, when did that first come up?
Well, it's a rather complicated evolution. I'll try to keep it brief. I started out in the radio business, and I was sort of an itinerant disc jockey production guy. By production, I mean creating commercials and promos and things like that, pre-recorded stuff. And I started actually liking that kind of work. Most disc jockeys hate it because it's more like work than fun. But I kind of enjoyed it, and I began to get curious about the people that I heard voicing national television commercials, national radio commercials, the people who did the voices for the cartoon shows and the documentaries, etc. And I wondered who they were, and I had a working theory that they were on-camera people making a couple of bucks on the side doing this, which probably was true in a few cases. But in 1970, I stumbled across the fact that this business called voiceovers existed. It was a very, very well-kept secret back then. Now everybody knows about it, but back then, nobody knew. And I discovered there were people who did nothing but this. They had agents, and some of them did very, very well. And I thought, looking at all this sort of weird little grab bag of talents I have, I cannot think of something that would be better for me as a job than voiceovers. It's just perfect. And so it took me about 10 years to make anything happen, but eventually I got in the business.
And for you, what type of voices require the most work for you? What type of voice work?
I was, well, lucky in one sense and not so much in other senses. You know, there are certain people who just have a signature sound and it's a winner. Your audience may be familiar with this guy. He's passed away, but his name was Don LaFontaine. And for a while, he did every movie trailer there was, or so it seemed. I never had that kind of luck, but I was lucky in the sense that I was able to work in virtually any phase of voiceovers. I was competitive in commercials, in narrations, in animation, you know, you name it, and I was pretty good at all phases of this stuff. My agent at one point said, "You're my utility player," which is a baseball term.
Yes, it is.
Most people probably know what it means. It's essentially a guy you can put in any position, and he'll do a good job. He might necessarily not be the best first baseman in the league, but if you need to put him in there, he can do a good job. And it's funny, when one part of the business would dry up on me, the other part would open up somehow, and it made for a lovely 25-year run.
And as technology has changed, obviously you have you evolved and gotten picked up on doing some video game work as well. And is it more challenging the types of work that goes in with that, or is it kind of go right hand in hand with the rest, I should say?
Well, the toughest part, I think, for an actor is with video games. There's no storyline, really. I mean, if I'm doing an animation thing, I read the entire script. There's a story. I've been assigned a character or characters. I see how they fit into the story, and I know what their motivations are. And that's, you know, how I'm able to do that work. But you come into a game, and there's just a list of lines, and you don't really know why you're saying them, and you're not interacting with anybody, because you're not playing a scene. I mean, in a lot of cases, you're playing a scene with the player, and that's not going to happen for months until the game comes out. And in some cases, the director won't even know what's going on. I'll say, "Why am I saying this?" And, "Well, I don't really know."
You know?
So what you have to do is make up a little scenario in your head and play that motivation and hope it fits.
And several of the shows that you worked on, you did multiple characters. Did that make it hard going from one to the other, or was it just a simple character at a time?
Usually the director will give you an option. They'll say, "Okay, you're playing a scene with yourself here, Neil. Do you want to do one character at a time and I'll feed you the other lines, or would you like to tackle it and see if you can get it all in one take?" And it will sort of depend on which characters they are and how I'm feeling that day. You know, am I feeling lucky? So I'll choose one or the other option, but that's usually how it goes.
Now, who was the biggest support in the early, like you said, it took you about 10 years to kind of get things rolling, and who kept you going through that time?
Pretty much me. It was a tough, it's always been tough to get in this business. It's just the reasons have changed. It's completely different from when I broke in the early 80s. Back then, as I say, voiceovers, nobody knew it existed. It was a very small group of performers, but they were much beloved by the producers, and they tended to use them over and over and over again because they delivered. And so you're trying to break in, and you're, you know, a producer's going, well, why would I take a chance on this unknown guy when I can use Steve over here, worked with him for years, never had a problem, you know? So you sort of had to wait your turn. And, once I got to Los Angeles and I started pursuing this thing, I was very lucky. I got an agent, a wonderful woman named Donna Lee Davies. And I guess that's the answer to your question. She believed in me and said, don't get discouraged. I'm convinced you've got what it takes. And yeah, she kept me going. I should have thought of that instantly when you asked that question, but fortunately, I stumbled into it. So there you go. Donna Lee Davies. She passed away a number of years ago, but I owe a lot to her.
Now, the fraternity of, you talked about the voice actors, a small group back in the early 80s. Was it everybody fighting for the gigs, or was it kind of like everybody helping each other out and through the work, if you will?
I can't talk about what's going on now with a great deal of authority, because I do a fair amount of work from home. And when I am called into a studio, especially now with the pandemic, there's usually nobody else around, at least no other talent around. But I got to say, no, I found the voiceover community, I've always found them to be the most lovely, generous, ego and attitude-free people you'd ever want to meet. Once I got in and started rolling, the prevailing attitude was, look, these jobs are like buses. If you miss this one, there's another one coming in half an hour. So, no, I've seen acts of incredible generosity, talent helping each other. And once in a while, an on-camera person would stumble into our world and look at us and say, I can't believe you people. I mean, on-camera auditions, we're all glaring at each other and trying to run numbers on each other. And, you know, he said, you people, it's like you're at a party. We said, well, yeah, you know, it's just the way it is with this business, the way it was. As I say, it may be very different now because you've got thousands and thousands of people either in the business or trying to get in the business. And a lot of stuff is done remotely, and so it's not the fun little cottage industry that it was when I got in the 80s. But most 99.9% of voiceover people that I know are just lovely folks. You couldn't meet nicer people.
And for you, over as you look back at your career, your lineup of work that you've done, are there any that really stick out to you as maybe the favorite voice that, or if you were to be remembered as one voice, which one would you want it to be?
Well, are you talking animation or the whole scope of the career?
The whole scope.
Well, probably the biggest thing I've ever done is I was one of the announcers on the Academy Awards in 2003, and that's a worldwide telecast, and upwards of 50 million people watched it in the U.S. So that's probably the most high-profile thing I've ever done, and I'm also very proud of about 25 or 26 Novas that I narrated for public television. I was a big fan of the Nova show. I still watch it. And, you know, if you'd told me when I was a humble disc jockey in San Diego in the 70s that someday I would get to narrate some Novas, I would have said, I would have been over the moon. And I am, you know, I'm very happy with the work that I did on Transformers and G.I. Joe, because those shows are, amazingly enough, still remembered and revered some 35-plus years later. A couple of the characters that I played, Shipwreck and G.I. Joe, and Springer and Transformers. People still remember them, want to get my autograph. So, you know, that's very gratifying. So that's some of it.
And if folks want to find more information about all the voice work that you've done, website, social media, where can they find that out, Neil?
Well, the best thing to do would be to purchase my book, which is titled Vocal Recall, A Life in Radio and Voiceovers. And it's basically my entire life, with the emphasis on the professional side. There's a teeny bit about my personal life, but not much. And the best place to go for that would be a website that is cleverly titled www.neilbook.com, NEILBOOK.com. Or if you just put Neil Ross Vocal Recall into Mr. Google, he will take you to the appropriate place. The book's available on Amazon, and it's available on Audible, and there is a spoken word version. The narrator on that one, surprisingly, is me.
I was wondering if you were going to give it away or not.
Yes, I won a highly competitive audition for that job. And what can I say? Sometimes the stars align in your favor, so.
That's awesome. Well, Neil, it has truly been great to visit with you, and I would love to have the chance to maybe catch up again real soon, and I hope you have a good rest of your week, my friend.
Oh, thank you, Cameron. Well, yeah, if you want to talk again, you know where I'm hiding.
Up next, MMA and UFC fighting legend. Also got a brand new movie called Cage Fighter, Chuck Liddell. First off, Chuck, always great to visit with you.
Yeah, great to talk to you. How you doing?
Doing good. And the new movie Cage Fighter, I know we're going to talk about that this morning. And if folks haven't seen the trailer, they've been hiding under a rock or anything. Chuck, tell our listeners a little bit about the new film.
Okay, about a guy, the world champion. They're at the end of his career, and they're putting a big fight on with him and a pro wrestling guy. It's a joke. And goes out and undertrains for it, doesn't get ready for it, and loses the fight. And then it's really the movie's about where he goes from here and with the rest of his career. And I play his coach, which is an interesting thing for me be a coach is not abnormal, but I got to play a character, so I'm playing a guy that's more like my trainer, John Hackelman. So I kind of play him and be on the other side of working with a guy that's in trying to figure out if he needs to retire or what's he going to do with his career and what he wants to do.
And for you to look at it, Chuck, from that side of things, is how much does it make you maybe appreciate the job that was always done for you as well?
Oh, for sure. I mean, it really, that does help me appreciate that job and being on that side of it. Thinking about, sometimes even if you've been through it, been in that thing, you haven't seen it from the other side. It's hard to get out and look at it from the other side. So, yeah, it was a good experience.
Now, when you first started the MMA and the UFC, did you ever envision going into the Hollywood direction with it? Did you ever see that in your future?
No, really, I didn't. I didn't know. Honestly, when I started in the sport, I thought it would get big someday. I didn't know it would get big during my career. I thought it would take us a lot longer to grow the sport. We just kind of exploded in 2005 after shooting the Ultimate Fighter, and things went crazy. So, I've done a lot of crazy things since then. And acting for me to start out is more to promote the sport, more to get on things to get the sport out to people, and now it turns into something I really like to do. So. It's been a great evolution for me.
Now, Chuck, which is harder to prepare for? I mean, obviously there's the physical for the fighting and the mental, but showing emotion on screen, I mean, is that as bad as getting punched in the face?
I, I, it, it was, it, it it was a lot easier to get punched in the face. Like, more to punch people in the face, actually. It's harder for me to get ready, and obviously it's something I haven't done my whole life. But I'm getting better and better at it, and I really like working for something.
And getting prepared for a new role. I mean, obviously you train for the fights. What kind of training do you do as you prepare for a new script?
Well, I work with people. I read through the script and kind of get a feel for the character, and then try to figure out how I want to play the character, and then kind of work with some people, and then I have people I will go to and work with, and then I've taken a few classes, but I need to take more classes. I think I want to get more on a regular basis so I get a little more of that. But, it's just a combination of just working with my people, my family, actually, my wife, my daughter work with me. Working with a couple coaches I work with too.
And Chuck, your story, like you said, when you got into it, you knew it was going to be something big, but you weren't ready or expecting it. Whenever you have an opportunity, obviously kids look up to you to be able to reinforce people chasing their dreams. I mean, how cool is that for you on a personal side?
Oh, it's been great. I mean, I get people come to me and tell me stories about stuff all the time, and or now I help them get through this or help them, do this. And, if I can, get that to people, just say, hey, you got to just keep trying, keep trying to do what you want to do. Enjoy what you do. Go out there and work hard. Don't just wait for someone to give it to you. Don't sit around waiting. It's going to happen. Go out and take it. You got to get out there and work for it. If you want it, just keep pushing. How bad do you want it? Just got to keep working.
And with a new release coming out during 2020, obviously, Chuck, this has been a year like none of us have ever been through before. How different is the release, and what have you been doing to occupy your time here in the meantime?
Well, yeah, it's interesting. I'm glad it came out now finally, but we shot this back in November last year. I have had a few movies back, fall out recently. Just this time, I keep pushing it back with all this restriction. So, yeah, it's been a crazy time, and we're getting through it. I mean, I've spent a lot of great time with my family, get to play with my kids a lot, and having a good time doing that. But I'd like things to get back to a little more back to normal for people. I'd like kids to get back to normal school and stuff, but we're having a good time with it.
That's right. Got to appreciate the times that we've got, that's for sure. Now, Chuck, of course, I always want to make sure and let our listeners know where they can find out more information about the new movie and also everything you got going social media-wise as well.
Yeah, Cage Fighter Movie. I think it's at Cage Fighter Movies. I'm at Chuck Liddell. So I'll put stuff up. It's coming out on in demand or on demand on Friday, and check it out. Check out the movie.
All right. Well, Chuck, always great to visit with you, man. I appreciate your time, and hope you have a good rest of your week.
Yeah, thank you very much. Nice talking to you.
And our final guest is Olympic gold medalist and FIFA World Cup champion Abby Wambach. She's got a new book, Wolfpack. First off, Abby, thank you so much for your time.
Oh, man, Cameron, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. No problem.
Now, the new book is out called Wolfpack, and this is based on the number one New York Times bestseller. And Abby, what was the inspiration to make this for a younger reader's edition, if you will?
Yeah, well, I think that there's probably no more important time than right now to hand leadership books and resources to our kids. I mean, and ourselves, quite frankly. But these books are based in honor. And I think that the way that we're experiencing our world right this second, there is no more important time to be handing books that are based in honor to our kids. And, I just feel so blessed that the world loved the first book so much that, we just started thinking about it, and it's like, okay, but we got to create one for the kids, because of course we think the kids can be our future, but we got to give them the right material so that they can actually change the world for the better.
And Abby, I know a lot of folks, and you always hear that you could do whatever you want to, obviously, but you can't necessarily do things by yourself, though, can you, Abby?
No, and that's what's so, I think, impressive about the way that this book is structured, is it gives kids power, individual power, and understanding and advice on how to curate their own specific personal power. But in the end of this book, it also tries to encourage these children, these kids, to create their pack, the people that they're going to do life with. Because how many times have we heard, you become your environment, right? And it's true. I spent decades with really successful women, really dedicated and ambitious women, really, really good at what they did. And because we all collectively bought into the same idea, it doesn't mean we agreed on everything. But we all collectively bought into the same idea of winning for the United States and representing our country, we were able to find levels of success that we would not have been able to do individually. And so can kids, right? Kids sometimes think that they don't have the power. They don't have the ability to create their own life or their own environment, but they do, and this book can teach them that.
And Abby, for you, what was it like as you started gaining popularity? I mean, that's not what you go into soccer for in the first place, but how blown away were you by when folks started coming up to you on the street and patting you on the back and showing support for you as well?
Yeah, I remember it was actually a really funny story. We had just lost the World Cup in 2011 in Germany in the final on penalty kicks. Like, we were as close as we possibly could. I had never won a World Cup championship before, and yet we still were invited to come back to Times Square in New York City to do the media tour. And we were all sad. We were all depressed because we had just lost the final the night before. And we pulled up to our team's hotel, and there was just this sea of people outside of our hotel. And we were like, what's going on out there, right? And so as we get closer, we see they're all in USA gear, and they're all wearing our jerseys, and they're all wearing, and wouldn't you know, they were there to greet us home, even though we had lost, right? This is the first time that I really experienced, and yeah, people recognize me, but this is the first time that it kind of, my life changed in that way, that I became a little bit of a B-celebrity or B-celebrity. And it was just, it was special to be welcomed home. Even though we were technically losers, our country still greeted us as we were winners. And yeah, it's special. It's something.
And Abby, something you talked about a minute ago about as a team working together, even though you didn't see eye to eye necessarily. And how important is that today, right?
Oh my gosh, right? Like, I think that's one of the things that I think surprises people the most, right? Because when you watch our women's national team, you're like, oh, they look like they're best friends. And that's just not true, right? I even had some teammates throughout my career that, like, I don't talk to at all anymore and probably never will for the rest of my life. But the truth is, and the one thing that I remind these kids of, is though I might not have agreed with them on a personal level, I respected them on a professional level. So you can work with somebody. You can go to school with somebody. You can be on the team as somebody else that you might not necessarily like, but you have to respect them because they're showing up, they're buying into the idea of winning, and they're giving their very best, right? And that is possible. You don't have to like everybody, but you sure as heck have to respect everybody.
That's right. And again, the new book, Wolf Pack, by Abby Wambach. Abby, I want to make sure and let our listeners know not only where they can find more information about the book, the previous book, and everything you got going social media-wise as well.
Yeah, I mean, you can just go to my social platforms. Everything is Abby Wambach. And you can find out any information you want to know about the books there, or go to wolfpacknextgen.com.
All right. Well, Abby, it's been great to visit with you. Congratulations on the many successes. Looking forward to hopefully visiting again real soon.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Again, thanks for joining us for this episode of Good Questions with Cameron Dole. And if you ever have a comment, question, or anything else you'd like to know, just find me on Instagram, Twitter, or on Facebook at GQ with Cam. If you'd like to help out in the funding for this podcast, feel free to click the support tab and follow the instructions. If you have a special guest idea, send me an email at Cameron@kwhw.com. We'll be back with episode 28 coming up tomorrow.